with their sexuality, because we're not in a culture that encourages sexual honesty. You know, if there was no cost for saying, hey, I am a kinky, perverted, nasty, dark, you know, pain-inflicting sadist, you know, consensually negotiated with a partner. Because here's what a lot of people miss. The intent is eros, you know, mm-hmm. not the, the aforementioned qualities. It's and somehow eros has gotten entwined with these kinds of desires, and that is still a mystery too, why that is. But I mean, it's like, why is someone a homosexual? I mean, these are all mysteries, you know, that are just the way things are with our sexual hidden culture. But so, you know, most people, it's really about helping them, you know, as a therapist, it's really just about helping them come to terms with what's sexually true for them, then learn how to express it in an honest way and in a consensual and a negotiated way. Not only that, but also in an ecstatic way, you know, how to really embody this, you know, be present with it, be fully experiencing it, you know, which means being in their bodies, you know, being connected to their bodies, being intimately connected.
Right. Well, and I want to step back here for a second. You've used the term eros, and I think what we do is a culture, and especially in tribes, as you break it down, and I've talked with a couple of my friends about even in what they call, when you start to throw terms around like BDSM, bondage, domination, sadomasochism, if you really talk to somebody who's involved in that space, that those terms really don't mean a whole lot because they are so general, they don't do it. But I kind of want to get your definition of what you're, when you say eros, what are you referring to?
That's the part of us that is, you know, sexually mythic, you know, in other words, is in this mythic story with personas, archetypes, you know, counter archetypes and personas. That is, so, okay, so say for instance, someone's kink is daddy-daughter oriented play, right, between two consenting adults. Mm-hmm. You know, on the daddy's side, you know, there's this daddy that can be kind of sweet and tender, who, you know, loves his little girl, protects her, is, you know, just delighted by her, and mm-hmm. and that kind of level of the play. I mean, these are energies that both sides can call up and really enjoy and take pleasure in, that kind of more supportive kind of connection with each other. Mm-hmm. And then there's what's more taboo or nasty or perverted, you know, than a daddy desiring to turn his little girl into a filthy sex slut. Mm-hmm. You know, so again, these are mythic dimensions. You know, does that mean that girl or woman, you know, because you were talking about adult people,
right,
nobody
is saying anything
real
about
father? No.
Yeah.
She has an erotic mythos that there's a powerful erotic charge that can go into in a healthy way with a consenting partner, and it is it's, like I said, I, as a therapist, I work with people in their 40s and 50s, and I have people come to me who have carried for 4 or 5 decades this part of them that they've never told anybody else before.
Right.
And this is inherent, innate parts of people that are clearly, if you look on FetLife or anything, it's just happening. It's part of reality. You know, it's not like there's millions of sick, you know, disgusting, weird people out there. This is just, no, these are the normal ways that these people are.
Mm-hmm. So it's part, it's part of what is normal for that individual. And I wanna step back too, and I'd like you to define, you've mentioned this several times. You mentioned it in the book and in the promotions of the book, but consent. Mm-hmm. You refer to consent, and I'd like you, you know, I have a definition, but I'd like to hear your definition of what you consider consenting adults. What's involved in consent? I mean, what does that mean?
I think number one is an intention to be straightforward, honest, direct, transparent, cautious, scrutinous, you know, diligent. There's a little array of qualities that I think that consent.
Communication, I think, is huge.
Revolves around, yeah. Communication, asking
clear
questions,
communication,
you know,
between the two.
Clarity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a sign off, and I know that's a huge thing. Now, so consent is, and this is actually a big deal within the quote unquote kink community now about consent and non-consent, mm-hmm. and we're talking about these. You know, you've mentioned daddy-daughter and dominant-submissive. These are terms used. I think most people kind of have a vague idea of what that means. But even within the community, I think years ago, one person was in charge, the other one did what they were told to do, and there wasn't looked as an equal relationship. But as it evolves, I personally believe that it's 50-50. You're both... Both of you are in charge of that relationship. Both of you have responsibilities to that relationship, that interaction. Both of you have to open and communicate. If one of you holds back, then you truly don't have consent. And even if it's a dominant taking a sub, if the sub hasn't communicated everything that is involved with that action, then there's no way you can make a clear, conscious decision. But it's more 50-50. And I think that's
a
difference.
It's a negotiation, you know, that is not going to be perfect.
Yes.
We all have, like, what I call landmines. You know, so, like, you negotiate something with somebody and you think you've got it all covered and you step into the, and this is mostly in the erotic container versus the relationship side. Mm-hmm. And I think needs to be clear that there's a clear distinction, because this is why some of the confusion occurs. I've stepped on landmines. You know, somebody said, to me once, if I get out of line, just slap me in the face. And I'm kind of saying, okay, I think I'm communicating, you know, hearing clear, okay, that. And so we were in a situation and she wasn't doing or resisting doing something, so I slapped her in the face. I could see she just kind of instantly left the building, you know.
Right.
I didn't have a connection with her any longer. She went somewhere else. So,
right.
And this is why... Staying, I look at BDSM and this kind of thing as a dance between two souls, you know, and they are consciously embracing these polarities, you know, with good intent, with, you know, erotic intent, with ecstatic intent. So the important thing in engaging is stay in the dance, you know, which means you're staying connected. That means your partner is with you step by step. So if you suddenly energetically or visibly, you can just see physically, whoa, that isn't where I thought she was going to go.
Right. You didn't do it to break the scene.
Yeah, so the safeguards in these things are like stop. You know, we already built in. If something happens unexpected, we'll stop. I'll check in with you and make sure. So you going in, you already know kind of, you're prepared for these kind of landmines that might show up.
Show up.
You know, so, yeah, well, it's inevitable, you know, that will show up. So there's no perfection in the negotiation that you can cover absolutely everything, but if you know reasonable adults can navigate these kind of territories, you know, if they're maintaining this connection, you know, so as a dom, you know, above all, do no harm. I'm protective of myself.
Right.
In this one realm, so there's a DS side, which I look at the noble side of, and then there's the profane side of the erotic BDSM. You know, and that noble side of DS, and I'm negotiating with my partner. Yeah, I want to respect her humanity, protect her humanity, encourage, you know, who she is, and make sure that no harm is done. So when we then enter into the erotic BDSM side of the coin, that part is still intact.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't left my intention to, you know, do no harm, you know, to maintain her soulful dignity, etc., mm-hmm. and care. Mm-hmm. So if something comes up, then that's where my default position is back to that guy, you know, who's, oh, let me check in, what do you need right now, and tell me a little bit of what happened, if you can describe it, or, you know, what was your experience there, you know, just to let them feel safe. You know, it's really just about, you know, in a moment like that, it's just come back to safety, come back to care, come back to a heart-to-heart connection, so that, you know, your partner knows that, okay, and sometimes people have, you know, hit some pretty deep traumas that have occurred in their past that they didn't think were there or didn't think would show up. But, you know, and so there is it's important to bring care into that moment because they just need some support right then usually.
So, you know, and it's interesting because when I go to events, and we didn't get a chance to meet each other, but we were at an event in the same place.
Oh,
the
you
same
were
city.
At Kinkfest, yeah. I didn't realize that either.
Yeah. So, by the way, and I did see your piece of equipment there. It's a beautiful piece of equipment. I've got to get me one, maybe two. Do you have one that you can put in the back of my Ford Focus?
Oh yeah. Well, I don't know for sure Ford Focus, but it's 57 inches is the longest component. Yeah.
So my real question is, we grew up in an age of shame, and so one of the things that came out of when I was speeding reading through the book, and again I apologize, I didn't get a chance to read it through, I'm reading another book, and I was amazed that some of the stuff that you're mentioning is actually in her research too. I'll mention that in a second, but. It seems to me we run into landmines even if we have a relationship, if we're married, and we have a wife, a husband, a partner, we love that person. That's why we chose to make it a commitment to each other. You still step on their toes. You still screw up. You still walk into landmines. It really isn't. That's part of being in a relationship, and you're relating. Mm-hmm. And kink tends to, and one of the reasons I like it is it's a much deeper, and I find it to be, my opinion, a much deeper and richer connection. It's a much more flavorful, even sexual connection than it would normal with just a quickie or somebody you met in a bar or even somebody you just didn't invest in learning. But there is a degree of shame that we grew up with. There's a lot of people in the community that are kind of in our bracket, and forgive me, I don't mean to throw you into this bracket, but I'm middle-aged, so that's part of it. Now, the younger generation, and I was mentioning this at the beginning of the show, my daughter is far more open. Even with me, I'm her dad. She talks about, you know, her girlfriends or boyfriends, whatever. I just added my daughter on radio. She doesn't kill me. But she's pretty open about it. She's on Facebook. But do you see a difference in you know, when you're exploring this with people and discussing the book, do you see it? Do those landmines become less with the younger generation as opposed to the older generation where we've lived with so much shame around sex, especially in the United States?
Well, you know, being of the 60s generation myself, yes. I can't say clearly what's going on with youth, but I think we are, you know, generations away from integrating our everyday sexuality into the rest of our life. Even with how much progress has been made in openness, I still think, so younger people I think are getting more open, but they're not necessarily more mature about it. They're not getting the education, but understanding the complexities as readily. And this isn't an easy territory. It takes a lot of thought to understand some of these distinctions and negotiations and, you know, taking care of each other. But I hope, I mean, that's my intention of the work I'm doing and the advocacy that I do. You know, I speak at college, universities and grad schools to human sexuality or psychology students, you know, those future therapists, you know, that are in the queue right now. I find, you know, I mean, it's like kind of a mix, you know, it isn't like they're all moving at the same pace or in the same direction. You know, there's still a lot of sex negativity. There's a lot of judgment. There's a lot of politics woven into it.
Restrooms? We're as a country, we're still talking about restrooms.
Yeah, I mean, so they're getting totally strange signals from the quote-unquote adults.
Yes.
That are running the show, politicians and religious leaders and all across the board. And, so there needs to be a lot of, not so much education. I mean, yes, education, but also just openness to allow them. I used to mentor and run workshops or retreats, you know, rite of passage weekends for teenage boys, you know. Mm-hmm. And when I first joined this organization to do that, they had what's called, you know, sex talk on Sunday of the event. And I thought, oh, great, that's great. They're going to bring this in. And then we're in the staff meeting before the weekend begins, and they say, well, we're just going to get rid of the sex talk because we try to do it and they don't want to talk. And so we're just going to do it. And I like stood up and said, wait a minute, I'll do it. You know, let me run it. Because I thought it was kind of hypocritical that here we are trying to teach these or initiate these young men into mature masculinity, and we're dodging talking straight up about sex. So it came down to pretty simple. It ran great was just by asking the question, what's the right age for you to start having sex? And I just opened and asked that open-ended question, and they just, boom, took off, and everybody was talking and had an opinion, and you know, not all the same one, mm-hmm. but it was opening up the conversation, because then we could talk about safe sex and pregnancy, you know, sexually transmitted diseases, responsibility, you know, and we had some fun too. But yeah, people, you know, kids are still finding their information on the streets and the playground and, you know, porn sites. For the most part, unfortunately, not getting a real good, solid, straight up, adult, mature information. Somebody they could just talk to about, well, could I, what about, you know, mm-hmm. ask intelligent questions that they already have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of it just, I think some of it's human behavior. Some of it's, some of what you speak of and address, I think actually is more, is even to the parenting. You can have a kid without any training. You can't drive a car, but mm-hmm. you can have a kid, and be responsible for no manual. I mean, and so somebody says, "Well, how does that evolve?" And I there's a really quick, short story I mention, and that is, I am as most people I think that listen to the show know, I'm considered what it would be a dominant or and a daddy. That's my personal proclivity. I live it with pride, but I am kind of a, you know, that's a very out there kind of male. And my daughter, who was 2018, and I've been very open with her, teaching her what she needed to do. You know, we had, and I don't know if this is right or wrong, but one of the things we told her is, if you can't talk to us about sex, then about having sex and getting condoms and going to the, you're probably not ready for it. And that's our sign to us that you're ready for this. If you can talk to us about it, then we know it's in your head and you're thinking about this. But anyway, go back to this. My daughter, I raised my daughter. She lived with me for the most part. And after she's out of college, she's still living with me. And she says, Daddy, I'd like to have friends over at the house. And I'd like them to stay over. And I thought about it, and I didn't object. I didn't want to necessarily run into a strange guy in my kitchen, so I said, you know, well, hopefully he has something. But a couple times a month, you know, once a week, I can see that, let it go. And she would bring her friends in, and I looked at these guys, and they were not very aggressive. They were kind of far less. I don't know. I want to use the term. I don't want to use a term because I don't want to disparage the term, and I'm not making fun of anybody. But they were not very. They were very retiring male individuals, and there was nothing wrong mm-hmm. with it. But I went to my daughter and I said, "You know, you don't have to. You don't have to accept that. You can choose whatever you want." I'm considering myself a reasonable human being. I'd already started in this path. I hadn't gone very far, but mm-hmm. I'd already started to explore my kink. She starts laughing at me. I'm crying. She starts laughing at me. She goes, Dad, you really don't think I want to date anybody like you, do you?
Jeez.
And that was my learning curve. But my point is, it was a sexual talk, but it really was about parenting.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm lucky that I have a very bright girl because she was already an adult. Mm-hmm. So...
Well, this is a kind of a, if I heard what you said there in terms of describing these young men,
mm-hmm.
I get a lot of women clients who are wanting their men to step up,
mm-hmm.
who are wanting their men, not just kinky, well, I guess maybe more kinky because that's about the focus of my practice, but
right.
More generally, even though they're just, are finding that they're, you know, the men are nice and sweet and gentle and kind and nice, but there's no edge. You know, they don't hold their ground. They don't push back. They don't hold their territory or bring, you know, it, you know. And so I think that's one of the kind of cultural shifts. Everything is like a pendulum that swings back and forth. You know, there's clearly been this kind of out of control, masculine, aggressive, violating kind of masculinity that's gone on for a millennium, you know. Mm-hmm. But then there's also now this swing. Robert Bly, a mythologist, philosopher, he called it the soft male, you know, who men in the 60s and the 70s who, you know, kind of in an intention, with an intention to become better men and, you know, accommodate, you know, the feminine and learn to listen better, all of which are good things, though also didn't retain their own rights, boundaries, edges, you know, to dance, you know, equally with their partner. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of a whole other talk. But it is something that comes up in when I work with clients of, you know, women, because they want their man to hold them a certain way, or, you know, grab them a certain way, or, you know, just embrace them. And, you know, they want that physical element of the masculine, you know, to be present with them.
Mm-hmm. You know, and we've kind of rambled a little bit here, but I want to, and it's okay to go over the, I know we, originally we talked about having you on until 9:30. If you have the time, I'd be glad to extend it. We can continue the conversation for a little bit longer, but because we actually haven't
got. Need to part at 9:30.
Okay. So I really haven't gotten to ask you what you mean by decoding your kink. What are you trying to, what's that?
Yeah. Well, it was kind of a word to use that has a certain contemporary sensibility to it. So I struggled or went through a lot of different titles for it. But this idea of being able to analyze, interpret, define, flesh out, go drill down into, look at the code, you know, that is holding this, the way your sexuality is showing up, you know, in your life. Some of these underpinnings. This is why, and also it implies the kind of the code beneath, you know, the program idea. And for people who are kink driven, there is a kind of an encoded story, you know, in the psyche, the sexual psyche already, that is personal. It's innate, and it's as inherent as your eye color and you know, or and innate as your fingerprints. I mean, these are distinct part of the personality. So it's just a kind of a title to convey that there is a complexity underneath however it's showing up in your everyday life. And I want to define that and have people look at that, because then they can have a richer experience so that they can engage it in a deeper and more meaningful and fully embodied, ecstatic, soulful way. Mm-hmm.
So I think I heard you say that you were actually, you did have another commitment at 9:30, so you had to leave us. And as we're
yes.
getting close to 9:30, why don't you tell our listeners how to get a hold of you, how to get a hold of the book, and any other pertinent information that they might need?
Yeah, well, that's pretty straightforward. I can, most of this information we talked about, at least on the sexual side, is on my website, GalenFous.com, GalenFous.com. My book is available through there. I have another book called The Sharp Edge of Love, which I've authored and published in 2000, so that's been around for a while, and which is the description of my early journey into kink and Eros. It's mm-hmm. quite a compelling story that focuses on four women, a fascinating dimension of the feminine and women that I are part of the book, that was very well regarded book back in the day. I also am involved and have been, you know, so my website has my ability, you know, someone wants to contact me and wants some coaching or client work as a client to help support them in the ways I've described, they can find that there. My book is there. The Discover Your Personal Erotic myth survey is there, which can be taken. It's totally anonymous. At the end, you can opt in after you've taken it, and then you go through a screen where you're not traceable from there. You can email for the compiled results of the other 2,300 people, and it's totally fascinating what people reveal in the survey, because there's places where people put their personal experience and dialogue from their personal rock myth and other things that are very fascinating, and the data is fascinating. As well, I also have a program that I call Conscious Erotic Male Dominance, that I work with men to support them in embracing their interest, desire to step into kink as a dominant in some way. I have a program on there that's specifically for men in that regard. All on the GalenFoos.com site. The Tetris portable dungeon suspension rig and sex swing is that, which has been around since 2000 as well, so sells all over the world, is at TETRUSS.com. Lots of free galleries there, lots of cool things to see. Rope work, rigging, you know, all kinds of good things. So it's been a pleasure being able to speak with you tonight, Will, and thank the audience and for listening this long, and it's been a pleasure to be part of your show.
No problem, and I want to let the audience know before we go into a musical break here that you'll also be able to find Gavin's contact information on at the Regarding Sex on Facebook as well. So if you have Facebook, you're...
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, and I'm on FetLife, Twitter, Tumblr. Just use my name. I'm pretty much under any of those.
You got it.
Find me there.
It was a pleasure speaking with you. I have a feeling that we'll have to have you back after you've had a little bit of time to tour the book and see what comes of it.
That'd be great.
All right.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, good night now.
All right. Okay, we've been speaking with Galen Foos and his book, Decoding Your Kink, and I will put that, or somebody will put that up on the Facebook page before the end of the night tonight, and then, of course, you'll be able to download the podcast as well. But let's take a little musical break here now. Give me a chance to get rid of all that water I've been drinking, which I realize is not fascinating. But again, without a co-host, thank you very much, Lulu Loves, and I try to get my girlfriend to come on here, but she's afraid of me. I'm going to have to work on that. I mean, I should have talked to Galen about that too, right? So, but here we go. Oh, you know what? I hate it when I screw stuff up. So I'm going to have to ramble a little bit. For some reason, here we go. I had a song picked out that I like. It's a little melancholy, and but also kind of nice, and I think you guys will probably recognize this.
Before you know it, you're frozen. Well, my daddy left home when I was three, and he didn't leave much to Ma and me, just this old guitar and an empty bottle of booze. Now, I don't blame him because he run and hid, but the meanest thing that he ever did was before he left, he went and named me Sue. Well, he must have thought that it was quite a joke, and it got a lot of laughs from lots of folks. Seems I had to fight my whole life through. Some gal would giggle and I'd get red, and some guy'd laugh and I'd bust his head. I tell you, life ain't easy for a boy named Sue. Well, I grew up quick and I grew up mean. My fists got hard and my wits got keen. Roamed from town to town to hide my shame. But I made me a vow to the moon and stars, I'd search the honky-tonks and bars and kill that man that gave me that awful name. Well, it was Gatlinburg in mid-July, and I'd just hit town and my throat was dry. I thought I'd stop and have myself a brew at an old saloon on a street of mud. There at a table, dealing stud, sat the dirty mangy dog that named me Sue. Well, I knew that snake was my own sweet dad from a worn-out picture that my mother'd had. And I knew that scar on his cheek and his evil eye. He was big and bent and gray and old, and I looked at him and my blood ran cold. And I said, my name is Sue. How do you do? How you gonna die? Yeah, that's what I told him. Well, I hit him hard right between the eyes, and he went down, but to my surprise, come up with a knife and cut off a piece of my ear. But I busted a chair right across his teeth, and we crashed through the wall and into the street, kicking and a gouging in the mud and the blood and the beard. I tell you, I fought tougher men, but I really can't remember when. He kicked like a mule and he bit like a crocodile. I heard him laugh and then I heard him cuss, and he went for his gun and I pulled mine first. He stood there looking at me and I saw him smile. He said, son, this world is rough, and if a man's gonna make it, he's gotta be tough. And I know I wouldn't be there to help you along. So I give you that name and I said goodbye. I knew you'd have to get tough or die. And it's that name that helped to make you strong. Yeah. Said, now you just fought one hell of a fight, and I know you hate me and you got the right to kill me now, and I wouldn't blame you if you do. But you ought to thank me before I die for the gravel in your guts and the spit in your eye, because I'm the son of a bitch that named you Sue. Yeah, well, what could I do? What could I do? I got all choked up and I threw down my gun, called him a paw and he called me a son, and I come away with a different point of view. And I think about him now and then, every time I try and every time I win. And if I ever have a son, I think I'm gonna name him Bill or George, any damn thing but Sue. I still ain't that man.
Thank you very much.
Your living. Hey, little sister.
what's your vice in you? Hey, little sister, shotgun, oh yeah. Hey, little sister, who's your Superman? Hey, little sister, shotgun, it's a nice day to start again. It's a nice day for a white wedding. It's a nice day to start again. Ow!
Welcome back to Regarding Sex. This is your host, Will DeFly. I'm unfortunately, Spicy Spice is off for this month, but she'll be returning in June for a new whole new slate of shows. You've been listening to Decoding Your Kink with Galen Foose and Will DeFly here, and we're just about to wrap up as we close in on the 10 o'clock hour. I do want to mention that our next show will be the third Wednesday of the month, and for some idiotic reason, I can't tell you. I couldn't even tell you what that date is, because I don't live more than 3 days ahead of time. It's just too hard for me to keep up. But I do want to mention that we will be going over instruments, some of the toys that what they call impact play. And again, this is a more, I mean, the show's, you're welcome to come down to the studio, see some of the masters of the different implements from floggers to, mentioned Singletails earlier, which is a whip, to paddles. Pretty much any of the stuff that you saw in any of the movies that feature scenes with any kind of play that follows that. But that'll be our next show in 2 weeks. On the 15th, we'll be joined with the co-host, who's also Lulu Loves, and she will be here as well. So bring out your questions, bring out your toys, see what you want, and listen in. And we'll also be informing you where to learn to use some of those instruments if you're interested, but also how impact play is incorporated into your life, into your lifestyle, what it means. We were talking a little bit earlier about some of the terms that people who are not familiar with this form of sexuality will look at it and say, well, why do that or why do this? But we'll kind of dive into that as well. And in fact, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to look up that date. I lost my phone, which is my key computing instrument these days, and so I'm going to have to look this up on a old-fashioned iPads. I don't know, are people still using iPads? I'm not sure if they are or not, but that date will be, I'm going to cancel out of that and go to month. That day will, it's the 4th, it'll be the 18th of the month. And then, again, on the 1st of June, Spicy Spice will return, and we'll be live again with a studio audience. By the way, this is a live studio audience show, and you're welcome to come in with your questions or comments or see what we're up to. We're located at the corner of 21st and Mission in the, 21st and Florida in the Mission District here. Great place to have a drink, get some food. Not a short walk from BART, but it is a walk from BART that is not that bad. So if you're in reasonable walking shape, you can make it there from BART as well. Get it 16th or the 24th station. Come on down. Some of the best pupusas in the city are right here, and they've got some great bar food as well. And generally speaking, most of the local watering and feeding holes in the area will take very well, good care of you. If you tell them you're coming down here for the radio station Mutiny Radio, as well as MutinyRadio.fm. I understand from some of our callers tonight that there is an issue with the live stream that it is not feeding all of all devices and all browsers. We are in the process of reinventing our website and upgrading all our equipment. For those of you who don't know the history of Mutiny Radio, it was a pirate radio at one point, and a real broadcast pirate radio. The FCC shut us down, and 4 days later, they made the internet available for streaming. So the station didn't miss a beat, moved into the streaming platform, and we are live. But obviously, if you've got a browser that's going to have a problem with the current feed, then it's not going to work. And unfortunately, we are a collective, so most of the work is done internally by members of the community, and most of them have other obligations. So not always does the technology roll out quite the way we expect it to. So I do apologize for that. But it's worth listening. And I hope you'll, if you get a chance to listen to the show on the podcast, you'll listen in live sometime here in the future, because we would like that very, very much. So I want to go ahead and get ready to sign off here. But before I do, I want to thank our special guest tonight, Galen Foose. And I will put up his information on the website, and you can download his book. It's a very interesting read. It's also a fascinating study. I'm in the middle of two books right now about sex and kink, and I find that both of them mention the fact that as a society, we don't manage language. We associate things negatively with a word that is never really meant, was never more a word that was meant to be anything more neutral. Not some of those words are actually have a more negative connotation, but it's interesting that as we let our sexuality go, words tend to make to be divisive, and I guess that's true in any walk of life, isn't it? Anyway, you've been listening to Regarding Sex with your host, Will to Fly. Spicy Spice and Lulu Love will be back in the near future. But we appreciate your listening. And for those of you who came down to the station to take a look at the show, thanks for coming down. Be sure to come down next time. All right. Have a great night. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
insomnia, anxiety, stress, chronic brain, depression, nausea. It can induce euphoria and stimulate appetite.
To,
I'm
going to
get
some
that is incorrect. Actually, Alex, the food I'm talking about are cannabis-based medicinal extracts.
Cannabis-based medicinal extracts? That sounds like you're smoking drugs.
Inject politics into the physician-patient relationship. I'm stunned that this POS bill would get this far, and I'm writing to call for action. If Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon signs it, she may very well kiss her political career goodbye. She's in a bad spot, damned if you do and damned if you don't. Compliments of the good old boys in the good old party, that's GOP, where extremists rule the day. But then, it was her choice to remain a member of a party that votes against women. To contact Governor Fallon, here is her office phone and fax. I am unable to find an email at this time, but when and if you call, please keep in mind that although she is part of the problem, she did not create the bill, nor has she signed it yet. It is hoped she will do the right thing. And Governor Mary Fallon, if you want to send her a letter, I'll read the address, or if you're in Oklahoma, I don't, if I have any listeners out in Oklahoma City or you know folks, go give her a visit. So Oklahoma State Capitol is at 2300 North Lincoln Boulevard, room 212 in Oklahoma City. I can send her a postcard even. It's Oklahoma City, okay, 73105. Call on the phone, 405-521-2342. Again, that's 405-521-2342. Let your voice be heard. If you have a fax machine and you feel like sending a fax, why not do that? The fax number is 405-521-3353. And then they have a quote from Susan B. Anthony, as there should be, I guess, in a lot of places. No self-respecting woman should wish or work for the success of a party that ignores her sex. And that's from 1872, long time ago. The debate over our right to choose what's best for our bodies and our future will most likely outlive us. But we fight because it's what our foremothers and forefathers did for us, and it's what we must do for our daughters and their daughters. It's been said in different ways that anti-choice legislation will never end abortions. They will only create unsafe abortions. Be sure we are hashtag not going back to the alley. And not going back is the only part of the hashtag to the alleys after that. Here are 13 large and small reproductive rights organizations and social media groups to visit / support. They can offer information and or discussion about women's rights and laws against women. Planned Parenthood, NARAL, which I hugely support. I also support Planned Parenthood, but NARAL more so. Pro-Choice America, NOW, National Organization for Women, NAF, which is the National Abortion Federation, RH Reality, UniteWomen.org, Abortion.com, I'm glad that exists, Fight Laws Against Women, We Are Fuse, and that's F-U-S-E, Abigail Adams Brigade, Pro-Choice Liberals, Stop Patriarchy Now, and Center for Reproductive Rights. Also those last two, yes. The Guttmacher Institute is an excellent source of women's reproductive data and current legislation. Many thanks to Meteor Blades for reporting this news and for his continued pro-choice advocacy for women's reproductive rights. You can read the story here, and they have a link to that. And so we march on, and we are hashtag not going back. And you can find all the links to all these organizations on the Facebook page, facebook.com/weeklyrev. I think it's time for some more music. Here's another song that was performed, and it's kind of angry, but also has a nice beat to it. So play this music, and then we'll be back with some more stories, some positive and some... We'll find ways to make it positive.
Yeah, my name is John Neffel, and I am an independent journalist based in Brooklyn, New York. I'm the co-host of a daily podcast called Radio Dispatch, and I've got a new story in the Village Voice.
Awesome. So, for folks who haven't read the story yet, perhaps we can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, definitely. So it's a feature-length profile of two leftist activists from New York, and I followed them for several months as they prepared to smuggle themselves into northern Syria to join a Kurdish militia that's known as the YPG, which stands for the People's Protection Unit.
Very cool. Wow. So how did you first get involved with them?
Yeah, it's funny. The story really begins back in late 2011. I was covering an action put on by Occupy Wall Street.
Yes.
In December of 2011. And I was arrested, even though I was a journalist, not an activist, I was arrested with 16 other people. And one of them was a young activist named Guy Stewart. And he and I ended up spending 37 hours in jail together as a result of the arrest. So, you know, we had a lot of time to talk.
Yeah.
And we basically stayed in touch over the years since then, and in January of this year, he sent me a Facebook message and said, "I'm doing something that you might be interested in." So basically from then on, he and I were in almost constant contact.
Awesome. Very cool. Great. So... yeah, so I guess we can talk more. I mean, we can maybe go back a little bit to Occupy. I remember because I left New York in 2011 in the summertime, shortly before that happened. I remember following it, and I was in St. Louis in the fall. So I was remember when that was happening there. And I do remember following online and seeing even the photo of you holding your glasses.
Yeah, that one was shared pretty widely online, and it was strange to find myself being the subject of just is objectively a kind of iconic looking photograph. It was a very strange phenomenon.
Yes. Yeah, and something similar here in San Francisco. There was a lot of pressure to have the police chief fired, and thankfully he has resigned. And a few months ago, folks took to City Hall, and of course the police ended up harassing and assaulting quite a few people, including journalists. So I think for some folks who were not quite were a bit surprised that that would happen, but that seems to have been happening for a very long time.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that at the local level, at the level of mayors and police chiefs, there's been a serious lack of attention paid to First Amendment protections for press, for activists, for assembly rights. And yeah, I mean, I really think that one of the lesser told stories over the last, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years is like a real just complete lack of respect for freedom of the press by mayors and police chiefs really across the country.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you encountered any more like violence in your fields since the Occupy movement?
Well, I was arrested a second time, also as a journalist, on the one-year anniversary of Occupy. But since then, there was a year where I had an official NYPD press credential, which I resisted getting for a long time, because I don't think that the police of any city should be the people conferring the status of journalists or not journalists.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you know, it seems to me a little bit like the fox watching the hen house, as they say. But after the second arrest, I kind of was just like, I can't keep doing my job. I keep getting kidnapped by the state.
Yeah.
So I applied for credentials, and then they expired. And honestly, since then, I've been doing less reporting on sort of demonstrations and marches and more stuff around Guantanamo and refugees and things like that. So I haven't personally seen a lot of that, though I know, obviously, in Ferguson, for instance,
yeah.
A close friend of mine got shot by the police with rubber bullets as he was approaching them with his hands up. And he's a white guy, so you know that they were trigger happy if they were doing that. And he was saying crap.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
You know, that's just like one of many, many examples of recent literal attacks on press.
So speaking of, I guess, Guantanamo, what's happening there, if anything at all?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I was actually just there to get a media tour earlier this month, just about a week and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they call it a media tour. In reality, it's about a one-day, highly choreographed, you know, very tightly controlled.